Welcome to page 30. We're up at the top where it says Thursday on the left-hand side, and on the right, as we had in previous pages, we have the section for the Old Testament. We're going to be talking through in more detail the events of Jesus' covenant and passion and Holy Week on page 29, where we just came from. We did like a, 10,000 foot view, but now we're going to get a little bit more into the details, into the nitty gritty. And here we go. Thursday night is the night of the Last Supper. Okay, so this is the night of a Passover meal. On a couple pages from now, I think it's page 32, we're going to talk through the four cups of the Passover, which are the structure of how the Passover works. And we're going to get into more detail there. But for right now, you can just note four cups of the Passover. That's going to be a connection between the Old Testament and the New Testament. Ultimately, Jesus is going to finish the Passover meal, drink that fourth cup on the cross. Okay, there's a little spoiler for you. Promise we'll get more into that in the next couple pages. A couple other things here. Let's look at the Last Supper meal itself. Okay, so the Last Supper was the Feast of the Passover. Passover was instituted in Exodus. You can write that over on the Old Testament side. The first Passover was when the angel of death passed over anybody who had eaten the flesh of the lamb and wiped its blood over their doorpost. So that original Passover happened in Exodus 12, and then annually from there on after, the Jews celebrated it. This is one of the three feasts that the Jewish men of a certain age have to go to Jerusalem in person. And so it's a big deal. Okay, so Jesus has been spending most of his life, I think all of his life, coming to Jerusalem for the Passover. And now finally, it's like the Passover that he changes into the Mass. Okay, this night also, he's betrayed by Judas. He's betrayed with a kiss, betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. He is sold, in a sense, to the Romans. Just like Joseph, he in the Old Testament in Genesis 37, he is sold by his brothers into slavery for 30 pieces of silver over in the Old Testament side. We also looked earlier at this, but if you wanted to note it again, there's Zechariah 11:12. Zechariah the prophet is told to throw his 30 pieces of silver into the house of the Lord. This night as well, after the Last Supper, is the agony of the garden. So Jesus goes out with his apostles to the Mount of Olives, and we have a scene of him being in the garden and him being tempted and him being afraid. So this is a parallel of Adam. In the old garden, the Garden of Eden, Adam is tempted and he gives into temptation. In this new garden, the Mount of Olives, Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus is tempted, the new Adam, and he does not give into temptation. Okay, so there's like a new Adam moment. He's also, this is the garden where David came out of Jerusalem and cried for his son Absalom, who was hunting him. Absalom, Absalom. And then Jesus cries, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, here in this Mount of Olives. In the middle of the night, Jesus is taken and tried in a kangaroo court. The Jewish law forbade trial by night. So this was like a staged thing. It's not supposed to happen. And it happens at the home of the Sadducee high priest Caiaphas, not in the temple where it should be happening. It's like closed door policy. They're not allowed to do that, and yet they do it in order to get everybody on their side, in order to bring Jesus to Pilate in the morning. Finally, kind of backtracking a little bit, here at the Last Supper connections, Melchizedek is worth mentioning. Melchizedek is that prince of Salem who Abraham encounters back in the book of Genesis, and he is a prince of Salem. So you think Salem means peace, prince of peace. Actually, he's the king of Salem, so Jesus is the prince of peace. Melchizedek is the king of Salem, as well as he ruled Salem, Jerusalem. So Jesus is in here in Jerusalem, where the king of Jerusalem used to offer sacrifices of bread and wine, and now Jesus is offering a sacrifice of bread and wine. Okay, like I said, there's a lot more in the Passover meal itself that we're going to get into on page 32, but for our purposes, we'll just pause there. That's kind of the Thursday. And now moving on to Friday. So Friday, a huge connection to Good Friday is Psalm 22. We looked at a couple different verses, namely Psalm 1, my God, why are you abandoning me? Verse 2, they will look upon him whom they have pierced, where Jesus is pierced. Psalm 22, verse 18, where they say, they cast lots for my garments and divide my clothes among them. So Psalm 22 is really the inspiration for, I suppose, if you could say it that way, a lot of things that Jesus does on the cross. Isaac is also just another big old, Old Testament figure who parallels Jesus. He carries the wood of the cross on his back. He goes on a 3-day journey up the hill with his father to be sacrificed. Jesus, the only beloved son of his father, carries the wood of the cross on his back. He travels out. He doesn't travel 3 days, but for 3 days he's in the tomb. And then in the story of Abraham and Isaac, Isaac doesn't have to die. a ram takes his place and dies in his place. And the ram is found. A ram is a male lamb. He's caught in the thicket, his head surrounded by thorns. Jesus, the lamb of God, takes our place where we are not sacrificed, but he is. And his head was encircled with a crown of thorns. You see all that kind of crazy connections. Okay, another one, just a big general one. I think we've talked about this again, a lot of repeating because there's just so many details. It's good to hear it multiple times, but the bronze serpent in Exodus, the people are in the desert with Moses and they start complaining. So God sends serpents among them to kill them and make them repent of their sins. And then he has Moses make a serpent out of bronze. So when they look at the serpent, they're healed. In the same way, Jesus, when he's lifted up on high, he's like the bronze serpent. He draws that comparison by himself, I believe, in John 3 or 4. And then, of course, he is the Passover lamb. So the Passover, you know, obviously the whole big Passover we're just talking about in Holy Thursday, the event by which God saves his people from slavery is going to be, there's going to be a new Passover now, the event by which the new Moses saves his people from slavery to sin. And Jesus is the Passover lamb. He is the unblemished male lamb, 1 year old, not a bone broken, who's going to be sacrificed, and his blood over the doorpost is going to save people from their sins, right? So anyways, he is, we're going to talk about this sham trial in the middle of the night a little bit more because there's more space here under our Friday thing. This is happening, think like midnight, 2 a.m. Okay. The Old Testament connection is Daniel 7:13, because they ask him if he's the Christ. And he doesn't really give a very specific answer. He doesn't say, yes, I'm God. He says things like, you have said so. But you have said so is actually slang for like, yes. Okay. And he also says, you shall see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power. He's referring to the Daniel vision of the Messiah in Daniel 7:13, where Daniel sees one like the Son of Man seated on the throne who is God. So he doesn't say in English, 21st century colloquial language, he doesn't say, yes, of course I'm God, but he does in Jewish language. Okay. So the high priest tears his robes and says, this is blasphemy. Okay. A connection to the Old Testament, the high priest is not supposed to tear his robes. He's not allowed to. That's a law in Leviticus 10:6 and Leviticus 21:10. So he is not allowed to tear his robes. His robes are seamless for this purpose. And he does it anyways in an expression of how angry he is. Okay. So a lot of things the high priest is not supposed to be doing, holding a sham trial in his house and tearing his robes. Okay. But this is kind of the interrogation that's happening between Jesus and the high priest. Interestingly enough, blasphemy technically is an intentional assault to the majesty of God. The words that Jesus spoke personally did not offend God in any way, according to Jewish law even, but they kind of chuckled and ran with it anyway, because of course they're so offended that he claims to be the Messiah. That's not the same thing as saying something blasphemous to God himself. Anyway, so biblical commentators are like, yeah, these guys took it and ran with it. They're being very dramatic by saying blasphemy and by tearing their robes. They're clearly, you know, the Sadducees and the Pharisees are concerned that Jesus is not the Messiah, but they also are totally protecting their own interests by dramatizing the event, by doing things. They're not doing things according to the law. It's like falsifying evidence in order to get a confession type of thing. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so that all happens kind of in the middle of the night. And then Jesus is kept overnight in some type of cell, some type of, you know, he's imprisoned. And then at 9 a.m., he goes to Pilate and has trial by Pilate. Okay. Now, the Jewish leaders, the Jewish authority, they are occupied by Rome. They do not have authority to execute anybody. And they don't actually want to be, you know, blamed for executing Jesus because they don't want backlash for his death to be directed at themselves. So they want, their goal is to get Pilate to execute him. Pilate is not interested in their Jewish religion. Pilate is interested in keeping peace and ruling well. And so They know that their best bet is to get Pilate to order him to die. Okay, so according to Deuteronomy, we can put this over in the Old Testament section, Deuteronomy 21, 22 through 23, anyone hanged on a tree becomes accursed by God. Okay, that's one of their things, okay? So they know that the Romans, Pontius Pilate, if he condemns Jesus to death, he's probably going to hang him on a tree, crucifixion, because that's what Romans do. So they want him to crucify him specifically. They don't want him to, I don't know if there are other Roman methods of killing, you know, behead him or anything. They want him to crucify him to discredit Jesus's claim to be the Messiah, because there is no way the Messiah would ever be hanged on a tree, okay? Because anybody hanged on a tree becomes accursed by God. Okay, so you see, they're trying to protect, save face. They're trying to make the Romans do it, and they're trying to make the Romans do the thing that the Jewish people would look at and say, oh, surely this is not the Messiah, okay? At 10 a.m. on Friday, thereabouts, you know, this is all estimated, but this is not estimated by me. Okay, I'm not just making this up. This is estimated by biblical scholars of when this would happen, how long this would take place. Pilate tries, he has Jesus scourged, and then he tries to get them to take Barabbas, the prisoner, he tries to get them to take Jesus, the prisoner, to be free instead of Barabbas, okay? Because there's a custom in which he releases a prisoner back to the people once a year, and he offers to release Jesus, like this innocent, meek guy, instead of Barabbas, this murderer, and they choose Barabbas. And then at the end, Pilate washes his hands of Jesus. Now, interesting note, Pilate's wife did have a dream, and she tries to warn Pilate to not kill this man, but Pilate does not listen to her. Okay, John 18, 33 through 37 says it was about the sixth hour when he's talking about Jesus carrying the cross, okay? The sixth hour was the time that the high priest started slaughtering lambs for Passover, okay? So the hour that Jesus is starting to really come to his final end and die is the hour that the Passover lambs are being slaughtered. He is being slaughtered alongside the Passover lambs. It's happening within a half mile away from each other, you know? Okay, at 12 p.m. he was crucified. So from 10 to 12 is the, you know, the stations of the cross, as well as, you know, the scourging, crowning of thorns, all of this happens. It's not a long walk. It's not a 3 days journey, obviously, out to Golgotha. It's really right outside the gates. And so they get right out there and then they crucify him. Now, right at this time, the Jews in Jerusalem, there is a choir during the Passover of Jews who sing the Torah. Okay, they sing the Old Testament all throughout the day, starting at the beginning of the day, all the way through the end of the day. And the Jews would have been singing, the choir would have been singing the Song of Songs at this hour in Jerusalem. Okay, they would have been reaching their midway point because it's midday. And so the Song of Songs would have been sung. Now it's a short book, it's only 8 chapters. That would have been heard audibly, perhaps even, you know, maybe it's too far away, but that sung, you know, think about the Song of Songs, the words of the Song of Songs being chanted, being sung really close by when the Song of Songs is happening. The bridegroom here is on his marriage bed, laying down his life for his bride. The bridegroom God. It's just crazy, crazy, crazy parallel. So you can write the Song of Songs as a parallel here because it is being sung at this same time. That is no accident, right? Now, actually about the crucifixion. So he is stripped of his clothes, like we talked about earlier from Psalm 22. His clothes are divided. Psalm 22:18. His clothes are not torn, they're divided among the people. He is wearing a customary bridegroom outfit. He's dressed as a priest for the day with a seamless outfit. And he is stripped of his clothes and then he's nailed to the cross and then he's lifted up. It's customary to write the crime above the head of the criminal so that the people walking by who are intimidated by seeing all these dying men are able to know that this crime was against Rome and like be warned, if you commit this crime against Rome, you will be crucified too, okay? So Pilate had inscribed, this is the King of the Jews, which it's in, you know, Jesus Nazareus Rexus Eodorum. Okay, I'm not very good at the Latin. I think that's Latin. This is I-N-R-I are the first 4 letters of that. So this is why it's inscribed. And of course the Jewish leader said, no, don't say that's the crime. The crime should be that he says he's the King of the Jews. Not that he is the King of the Jews. Again, they want to discredit him. They want him to be hanging on the cross. They want him to look like the opposite of the Messiah that he claimed to be. And Pilate said, no, what I've written, I have written. Anyway, so that's how it ended up being the crime that he committed is being the King of the Jews, which he actually is, of course. Now, I think I might have mentioned this earlier, but worth saying again, Golgotha, the location, is a quarry outside of Jerusalem. The quarry workers mined the rock. The masons mined it to get, you know, rock that they needed to be able to build things, and they got to a piece of rock that was ionized, meaning they can't use it for construction, so it was rejected. So literally Jesus was crucified on the stone that the builders rejected, and he is the cornerstone, okay? Now, Jesus says 7 last words from the cross. Most of these have Old Testament connotations. Let's take a look. The first one is, my God, why have you abandoned me? They say, oh, he's calling to Elijah, but this is Psalm 22. This is the opening line of Psalm 22. But if you read the whole psalm, besides all the, you know, hints at the crucifixion, there's also a triumphant ending. David also often writes songs that begin in despair but end in hope. And that's exactly what this psalm is. So it's not just him complaining. Now, in fact, it's not him complaining at all. It's him referencing a psalm which will end in hope. Okay? He is declaring God's victory, not just complaining. They think he's calling for Elijah because they speak Greek. He is speaking Hebrew. The Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. I don't know how to say that. I tried my very best. It sounds Eli, lama in Hebrew. It sounds like Elia in Greek. So they think he's saying the word Elijah, but he's actually saying my God, why have you abandoned me? Okay. Common, it's Greek to me, problem, am I right? he also says the words, it is finished, okay, which is speaking mostly about the fourth cup, which we are going to talk about on the next page, so I'm not going to jump ahead. This is also where the line, I thirst, that's one of his last words as well. He says, I thirst. They give him a drink. It's the fourth cup. We'll talk about it on the next page. And then he says, it is finished after that. By the way, these are not in the order that he actually said them. Sorry, these are just in order of importance to the Old Testament. So bear with me. He also says, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. That's a direct quote from Psalm 31:5. The other three words that Jesus speaks from the cross are to Mary and John. He says, woman, behold your son, behold your mother. That doesn't have a direct Old Testament correlation, but it just shows that Jesus is caring for his mother. And as we're mentioning Mary, we might as well mention that she is the queen mother. So King Solomon, in his office, when he was a Davidic king, he instituted an office called Queen Mother, in which his mother, Bathsheba, sat and ruled alongside him. She was the mediatrix. She was the one who, if you wanted something from the king, you go to the queen. Normally, when you think of a king and a queen ruling, you think of a man and wife, but that's not the case, especially when the king has so many wives. So it's the king and his mother. And that practice followed the Davidic kingship all the way through. So Jesus is speaking to his queen mother here, okay? He's giving his mother to John, and through that, giving her to us, the universal church, where she's all of our mothers, and she's also the queen mother of Jesus, the one who is the mediatrix of all graces, the one that we go to when we need something from Jesus, we can ask her. Okay, that's not directly here in the scripture, it's a cool Old Testament thing that she fills that office of queen mother. He also says to the good thief, you will be with me in paradise. Again, not a direct quote to the Old Testament or anything, just amazing that the good thief stole heaven at the very last second there, right? He also says, Father, forgive them, they know not what they are doing. He's speaking about the Roman guards forgiving the people who are killing him. And those three words don't have direct Old Testament things, but that's just what he says. So Jesus labors on the cross for 3 hours from 12 to 3, and then he dies. This is actually unusual. It usually would take longer for crucified criminals to die. Days, because they die from suffocation. They die from not being able to breathe, and then they push up on their feet to be able to gasp for breath and then fall back, let their body weight hang, and they can't breathe that way. Jesus was so beat up that he died quickly. So he died within 3 hours. And actually, in order to expedite the death of criminals, they would break their legs so that they can't push up on them anymore. So when it came time to expedite the death of the criminals, they wanted everybody to die quickly in order to, you know, bury them for the Sabbath, etc. They saw that Jesus was already dead, and they didn't actually break his bone. Now, this also is an Old Testament reference. Exodus 12:46 describes how the Passover lamb should not have a bone broken. And Jesus is the Passover lamb. He, instead of having to have his leg broken, he was already dead. They pierced his side instead, just to ensure that he was dead. Now, when he died at 3 p.m., there was an earthquake, okay? I think sometimes we miss this fact. There was an earthquake and people rose from the dead and walked around, okay? There was a mass resurrection at his death. Just saying. This points first of all, we're talking about the earthquake. The earthquake caused the Holy of Holies curtain to tear in two. This, you know, means we need to understand what the Holy of Holies is. If you go over to your Old Testament side, the tabernacle that God commissioned Moses to make was designed based on a heavenly vision that Moses had of heaven, right? So God is telling Moses to build a tabernacle, a portable tent for him in the wilderness, based off of what heaven is like. And within that structure, there's like a Holy of Holies, an innermost place where the Ark of the Covenant is kept. Okay, it's special, it's sacred. And then they put a big curtain in between the Holy of Holies and then the outer court, right? So that it's super, super hidden. Now, when Solomon went to build the temple, he built it based off of the tabernacle. So if the tabernacle is based on heaven and the temple is based on the tabernacle, then the temple now looks like heaven. And they established a much more structured thing. They've got the Holy of Holies with this huge 40-foot tall, really thick curtain made of animal skin and hair. And, you know, nobody goes back there except for once a year. And they give a seed offering. And outside of the Holy of Holies is the holy place, which has the altar of incense and the bread of the presence and different things like that. And priests can go in there, but only again, once a year or so. It's very, very limited. And then outside of that is the court of priests. And outside of that, you know, we've been through the temple drawing earlier in this packet. But the Holy of Holies is divided by this curtain. And at the death of Jesus, the curtain tears from top to bottom.
It could not have been torn by a man or a band of men ripping at the sides of the bottom. It's torn from top to bottom. This is impossible. This is God opening up the curtain, the Holy of Holies, saying, now this is accessible. This presence of God is accessible to all. Through the death of Jesus, we have access to the Holy of Holies. Now it's not just exclusive, reserved. It's for everybody. So that's crazy. So the Old Testament side, you can write what you know about the Holy of Holies. But on the left-hand side, what happened at 3 p.m. is the curtain was torn in two. Also a connection, Jesus dies and he's in the tomb for 3 days. Jonah is in the whale for 3 days. Little connection point there. Okay, crazy, right? I'll see you on the next page. I'm going to reserve all my comments for there.